possible to move closer? Is it possible to move closer? Looks better. Good morning, dear friends. Today is April the 10th in the year 2012, and we are on our last day of the retreat, Cultivating Happiness. We have learned already the first 8 exercises on mindful breathing. And we have been practicing them. The practice of mindful breathing, your breath, could be considered to be your guardian angel. The angel is always with you. Every time you need your guardian angel, he, she will be there for you. When you feel confused, you feel lost, you don't know what exactly to do, what is the right thing to do. And then the practice of mindful breathing is what we should do. And you have your guardian angel with you, showing you what to do and what not to do. Always available. For our cell phone, sometimes we forget, sometimes it runs out of battery. But the guardian angel, your practice of mindful breathing is always there for you in every circumstance. And we know that the first exercise is being with your in-breath and out-breath. To be aware of your in-breath and of your out-breath, to be with your in-breath and your out-breath. And when your in-breath and out-breath are peaceful, harmonious, and we have peace and harmony in our body, in our feelings. And the second exercise is to following our in-breath and our out-breath. We follow our in-breath and out-breath all the way through, no interruption. That is why concentration is growing all the time during the process of breathing in and breathing out. cultivating mindfulness and concentration. The third exercise is being aware of your body. So this is it, to connect with our body and to be one with our body. And when mind and body are together, we are establishing here and now in order to touch life and all its wonders. And the fourth exercise is to calm our body, to release the tension in the body, and to help reduce the pain in the body. So these exercises we can practice all day long for the better well-being of our body and mind. And with the fifth, we go to the the realm of feelings. And the fifth exercise is how to generate a feeling of joy. And we know how. Going back to the here and the now, we can touch many wonders of life, many conditions of happiness that are already available, more than enough for us to generate a feeling of joy. And to be aware of it. And the sixth is to generate happiness. Joy and happiness are the two kinds of energy that can be generated by the practice of mindfulness. That is why we can say that mindfulness is a source of joy and happiness. And the seventh exercise is to be with your painful feeling. We have to be there for our painful feeling and to take care. We should not try to run away. And with mindfulness, we are strong enough in order to do so. And with the eight exercises of mindful breathing, we reduce the intention, we calm the pain and the emotion with the practice of mindful breathing. This is to take care of our body, our mind. And you see, it's a methodical, it's a very scientific. When we come to the nine, we go to the realm of the mind. Mind here is a river of mind made of drops of water called mental formations. We have 51 categories of mental formations, good ones, wholesome one, and unwholesome one. We have the seed of joy, of peace, of compassion, of hope, of forgiveness, many good seeds. Every time they manifest, they make us happy. And we do have also the negative seeds like despair, anger, doubt, and so on. And we have other seeds that can either be positive or negative. So every time one seed manifests up on the upper level of consciousness, we should be there in order to recognize it. You sit on the river of mental formations and recognize the mental formation that arises. And you can call it by its true name. Hello, my little fear. I know you are there. I will take good care of you. Always capable of recognizing the presence of the mental formation, and we can call it by its true name. And that's why when I was a novice, I had to memorize all these 51s. If each one manifests, I should be able to call it by its true name. So the ninth exercise is to be aware of mind, of mental formation. To recognize it, simple recognition. You should not try to grasp. You should not try to fight. Just recognize it simply. Mere recognition of the mental formations. And the 10 is to touch the good one, to touch the seeds of good one, inviting them up to make the landscape of the mind more beautiful, more joyful. That is our practice. We have learned that. Selective watering. You don't water the negative seeds. You only try to water the positive seeds in you and in the other person. This is called gladdening the mind. And the 11th one is concentrating the mind. This is a practice of concentration. Whether that is a manifestation called craving or despair or anger, you may like to focus your attention on that very mental formation and look deeply into its own nature. And you might get a breakthrough and understand the real nature, the real roots of that mental formation. It's like a lamp focusing on spotlight, directed your mindfulness, your concentration is like a spotlight directed on that object so that you can have a deep look into it. That is the practice of concentration. And with the practice of concentration, we be able to liberate our mind. To liberate ourselves from the mental formation. That is the method of the Buddha. And for the last four exercises, the Buddha proposed a number of practices of concentration in order to help us realizing that kind of liberation. The 13th is the practice of concentration on the nature of impermanence. And intellectually, we know what impermanence is, And we also agree that things change, they are permanent. And yet we still behave like as if things are permanent. Suppose you get angry at your beloved one. You want to shout or to punish. But if you practice mindful breathing and look into the nature of impermanence of your beloved one, you ask yourself what she will become in 300 years. And you see very clearly right away. When you get angry at your beloved one, it's helpful that you close your eyes. Don't say anything. You breathe in and visualize your beloved one 300 years from now. Where you be, my beloved one? And where I shall be? And in just a few seconds, you can see the nature of impermanence. And you see that it's foolish to get angry at each other here. So when you open your mind, the only thing you want to do is to hug that person in front of you and enjoy the fact that you are still alive and she is alive in front of you. There's an opportunity to do hugging meditation. So that is the practice of impermanence. Impermanence is not a theory, a doctrine. It is a practice. It is a practice of concentration. Because the idea of impermanence does not help. It's not helpful enough. You have the idea, but you don't practice. You need the insight of impermanence, the real insight of impermanence. The idea of impermanence does not liberate you, but the insight does. And if it is if it's an insight, it is the fruit of your practice of concentration. Concentration, samadhi, is a practice and not an idea. So the 13 is contemplating. Impermanence. All the wise people agree on the fact that everything is changing all the time. Everything is impermanent. Whether they are from the east or from the west, from the north or from the south, they all agree that things are impermanent. And the 14 is contemplating the nature of non-craving. Contemplating non-craving. When we visualize the object of our craving, whether that is wealth, or fame, or sex, or power, we have to look deeply into that object and see the true nature of that object, because there may be a lot of danger inside. And when you run after that, when you make it yours, you may suffer endlessly and cannot get out. Suppose a fisherman launched his line, and the fish saw a very appealing bait. And he wanted to bite. But if the fish knows that there is a hook inside, she can never bite. If she did, and then she will be hooked up and die. So the same thing is true with the object of our craving. And that is a contemplation on non-craving, so that you can be free from the object of your craving. The 15 is a concentration called extinction, nirvana, the extinction of all notions, including notions of being and non-being, the extinction of notions, including the notion of beginning and ending, birth and death. And this is a very basic concentration practice. It can be very helpful. It can remove so many wrong perceptions. Suppose we think of immortality and mortality. When we worship a god, we believe our god is an immortal. And we believe that we are mortals. So there is a discrimination between the two. I am immortal and you are an immortal. I bow in front of you and ask you to help me not to suffer so much. And when you both bow to the Buddha, you say, you are a Buddha, I am only a human being. So please help. So that discrimination between Buddha and human being is a wrong perception. Because the fact is that a Buddha is a living being. And every living being can be a Buddha. So that is why this morning, before we bow to the Buddha, we make it very clear, dear Buddha, the one who bows and the one who is bowed to are both by nature empty. You are empty of a separate self, and I'm empty of a separate self. You, Buddha, is made of non-Buddha elements, and I'm made only of non-me elements, and I am in you, and you are in me. And with that kind of meditation, you see the truth of interbeing, and that is why when you bow, there's a real communication. Otherwise, the Buddha will be the Buddha only. And you are only you forever. And there is no real communication possible. And that's why when you pray to Jesus, you must remove the kind of barrier between you and him, contemplating interbeing. And then your communion with Jesus will be very deep. And I believe that Christian mystics, they know how to do it. And if we can remove notions like that, including the notion of being and non-being, we can also remove the notion of birth and death, beginning and ending. Some of our scientists have realized the vision that nothing is born, nothing dies. We cannot create matter, we cannot destroy matter, we cannot create new energy, we cannot reduce energy into nothingness. The law of conservation of energy and matter is very clear that some of our scientists have seen the nature of no birth, no death of reality. And yet some other still looking for the creation of the cosmos. They are trying to find out how the cosmos began. And that is why we have theories like a Big Bang and so on. If there is a creation, there will be a destruction. If there is a beginning, there will be an end. If there is a big bang, and then there should be a big crunch. So if we are able to remove these notions, we are absolutely in peace. We don't suffer anymore. And that is the object of the 15th exercise, contemplating the removal of all notions, the extinction of all notions, and in order to cool all the flames. Contemplating extinction. Extinction of all notion. And the 16 is contemplating letting go. Letting go of all these ideas, and you are utterly free. In Christianity, we speak of salvation by grace. In Buddhism, they prefer the expression salvation, liberation by insight. If you get the insight, you are liberated. But I think insight is kind of grace. You can very well interpret insight as the greatest kind of grace that you can get. Contemplating, letting go. This is one of the most basic texts on meditation. And it would be profitable if we have the time to study in depth this sutra and apply the teachings into our daily life. There are many schools of Buddhism, and there are many teachings on the practice of concentration. But there is one practice of concentration called the Three Doors of Liberation that can be found in every Buddhist tradition. The three doors of liberation. We have anger, delusion, fear, despair, craving. We suffer because of these flames. We want to be liberated from these afflictions. And Buddha proposed many exercises on concentration, including the three doors of liberation. And the first door is emptiness. Shunyata. Emptiness does not mean non-being. No. Emptiness is a method, an instrument for practicing concentration. This morning, during the ceremony of the transmission of the five mindfulness trainings, we recited the Heart Sutra. Shariputra, form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Everything is described as empty. Suppose we look into this flower. And according to the Bodhisattva Avalokita, this flower is empty. But when I look into the flower, I see that there is a lot of things in the flower. There is the sunshine, the cloud, the minerals, the earth, time, space, even consciousness. And if you continue to look, you will find out that everything in the cosmos is present in this flower, including yourself. And anyway, this flower is the object of your consciousness, of your perception. Because to perceive is always to perceive something. There can be no perception without object of perception. So there is a perception, and this flower is the object of my perception, the object of your perception. So your mind is in here, in the flower, or the flower is in your mind, which means the same thing. In the beginning, we see a cloud, and then we see the sunshine, we see the soil, we see the mineral, the rain, everything. And if you continue, we find out that the whole cosmos have come together in order to produce or to help this flower to manifest as a wonder. One day, the Buddha was holding a flower like this and smiled. And he did not say anything for a long time. And the audience was so silent, and they did not know what the Buddha wanted to do or to say. Suddenly, there is one monk. His name is Kashyapa. He smiled. And the Buddha said, "Kashyapa, you get it." I don't know whether you have got it. You are a continuation of Kashyapa. In fact, I want to say that this flower is full of the cosmos. The whole cosmos is in this flower. And your body is also a flower. The whole cosmos is in your body. But why the Bodhisattva said that this flower is empty? That is why we should ask him, Mr. Bodhisattva, you say that the flower is empty, but empty of what? It's full of everything. And then the Bodhisattva may say, yes, you are right, it's full of everything, but there is one thing that is not there. The flower is full of everything, but empty just of one thing. And what is that one thing? It's separate existence. Because a flower cannot be by herself alone. A flower has to interbe with all the cosmos, with all the non-flower elements. And that's true. A flower is full of everything except a separate existence. You cannot be by yourself alone. You have to interbe with all of us, humans, animals, vegetables, and minerals. And that is the meaning of emptiness. Emptiness does not mean you are not there. You are there, but empty of a separate existence. Suppose you look at this glass, and we think that this glass is empty. But we can ask, if this glass is empty of what? It is empty of tea, of course, but it is full of air. So empty always means empty of something. And in this case, empty of tea, empty of a separate existence. In order for the glass to be full or empty, the glass has to be there. The glass is there, empty or not empty. So we cannot mix up emptiness with nothingness, with no being. Because the glass transcends both being and non-being. The other day we spoke about the death of Jesus Christ and his resurrection. It is said that God has sent us his only Son so that the manifest of Jesus Christ in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, is not really a birth, an essence. Because to be born means from nothing you become something. But Jesus Christ did not begin to exist from that moment. That is only a new manifestation of Jesus Christ. So you cannot say that before he was born, he did not exist. Before he was born from Mary, he did not exist. You cannot say that. So that moment cannot be exactly called the moment of birth, a moment of continuation. The same thing is true when someone dies. You think that person is passing from the realm of being into non-being. But that is not true either. Because birth and death, they always go together. If there is birth and there is death, it's like the left and the right. If the left is there, the right is there, right in the moment. You cannot say that birth is born first. And you have to wait 100 years in order to have death. That's not true. As soon as birth is there, death is right there at the same time. It's like left and right. The moment when you see the left, the right is already there. The above and the below also. So our wrong perception is that we think that death is something later on. Now only is life, is birth. But a biologist can tell us something. The biologist can tell us that cells in our body, they die. Many of them die in this very moment. And many other cells are born in this very moment. Birth and death takes place at every moment. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of cells die at this moment. And hundreds of thousands of cells, new cells, are born. So birth and death happen every moment. And birth and death go together. If there is no death, there is no birth. If there is no birth, there is no death. So it's wrong to say that now death is not there yet. We have to wait something like 80 years or 100 years to see death happening. We are experiencing birth and death in every moment. Why we should be afraid of death, of dying? Because if death is, something else is with death, birth. That is left and right and so on. It's like the father and the son. If there is no son, there is no father. The moment the son is born, the father is a father, but not before that. So the son and the father are born at the same time. It's like the left and the right, birth and death. It's called co-being. They co-interbeing. Birth and death. Sahabu. Means co-being or interbeing, and things inter are, left and right inter are, above, below, inter are, and at the same time. So the moment of so-called birth of Jesus Christ is only a moment of continuation. The moment we call his death is also a moment of continuation, because the death of something means the birth of something right away. So don't think that birth and death are things that can go alone. Like this sheet of paper. There is a left and the right. And the right lean on the left to be, and vice versa. And now if we ask the left to go away from the right, please, my dear friend, take the right and go to London, and I take the left and go to Birmingham. It's not possible. They are together all the times. The same thing is birth and death, being and non-being. And that is the first step. The second step is to remove these notions. And that is why removing the notion of birth and death is very important. And when you look at into something like a flower, like a human being, and if you see that the flower or the human being is made of elements in the cosmos, you see the moment of birth is only a moment of manifestation. And when the things are no longer together like that, there is a dissolution in order for the flower or the human being to resume, to take another form, like a cloud. When the cloud becomes the rain, you don't see the form of the cloud anymore. But that does not mean the cloud has died. The cloud has simply become the rain. That is why emptiness become a kind of door helping us to be liberated. if we believe in a separate self, and we be attached to the idea of birth and death, you and I, and that will involve a lot of suffering and fear. So emptiness is a kind of door for us to discover the nature of no self. A Buddha is made only of non-Buddha elements. Buddhism is made only of non-Buddhist elements. A flower is made only of non-flower elements. And if we touch the nature of no self, we touch the nature of emptiness, and we are free. And that is why emptiness is a door of liberation. And there is a huge volume of literature called Prajna Paramita, teaching us about emptiness. Emptiness does not mean non-being. Emptiness means only the absence of a separate existence. Everybody, everything interease with everything else. The second door of liberation is the door of signlessness. Animitta. Vô tướng. When the flower manifests, we recognize her through a sign, the sign of a flower. And when the sign of a flower is no longer there, we feel lost, we feel sad, we cry, because our flower is no longer there. We are caught in a sign. When you look up into the sky, you may see a beautiful cloud. And you might fall in love with one of these beautiful clouds. But clouds are impermanent. They change forms, colors, and so on. And one day, you might not see your beloved cloud in the sky. So you cry. My beloved, where have you gone? I miss you. Why you have abandoned me? Like this. So we are caught by the sign, and we are caught by the notion of being and non-being, birth and death. But if we look deeply into a cloud, we see that the cloud is made of non-cloud elements. We can see the water vapor, the ocean, the heat, and so on. And we can see that it is impossible for a cloud to die, to pass from the realm of being into non-being. A cloud can become rain or snow, but cannot become nothing. So with mindfulness and concentration, with the freedom from the sign, because we are no longer be caught in the appearance of the cloud. That is why we can recognize our beloved cloud in her new form, the rain, or the snow, or the tea. And you don't cry anymore. So looking deeply, you get in touch the reality of no birth and no death, and you are free from the sign, from the appearance. And you are free from grief, from despair, and so on. You are so used to that kind of form, and when that form is no longer there, you cry. And that is why it's very important to look deeply and to see that that is very important to be free from forms, because the reality of the nature of reality is free from notions like being and non-being, birth and death. And with the door, the second door of liberation, signlessness, you are free from despair, from grief, from anger. And that is why the second door of liberation help us to be free. When you drink your tea with mindfulness, you might see your cloud in your tea, and you can smile to the tea in your cloud. Yes, to smile to the cloud in your tea. And learn to be free from the outer appearance. When you practice, when you do a chemical reaction, you might have impression that something disappear in the course of the chemical reaction. Something exists and cease to exist. But when the scientist look deeply, he recognized that nothing disappears. That's only the form, the number of atoms constituting that substance are still intact, the same. Nothing died, nothing is born, and nothing dies. So with the insight of no birth and no death, we can be free from the outer appearance, and we are free from our grief and our despair. And the third door of liberation is called aimlessness. Apranihita. Apranihita means to place in front of you something as the aim and run after it, whether it is fame or wealth or power and so on. Each one of us is looking for something. Peace, freedom, enlightenment, power, wealth, and so on. Each of us has an aim, has something to run after. And we spend all our life running after an object of our desire. We think we need that. We need enlightenment. We need liberation. We need compassion, we need peace, we need money, we need power, and so on. It depends. But with this concentration, we find out that we are already what we want to become. What we want, it is already there, whether it is the Pure Land of the Buddha or the Kingdom of God, or liberation. In our practice of walking meditation, we know that if we are concentrated and mindful, if our mind and body are there, we'll be established in the here and the now, and we can touch all the wonders of life that are available, and the Kingdom of God is present in the here and the now. We don't have to run and look for it. The same thing is compassion. Compassion is there in our heart. There is a seed of compassion. If we know to breathe in and touch the seed of compassion in us, that seed will manifest as energy of compassion. It is available compassion. We don't have to go and look for it somewhere else. Enlightenment also. Enlightenment is always enlightenment about something. There are those who walk like sleepwalkers. They don't know that they are there. They are walking. There are those of us who enjoy every step and get the joy of making steps on this beautiful planet and enjoy every moment of our being on Earth. So to be there, to have mindfulness, and to be truly there, and to know what is happening in the present moment is enlightenment. I am enlightened on the fact that I am alive. I am enlightened on the fact that there is air, fresh air for me to breathe. Enlightenment is always enlightenment about something. The fresh air is available. Mother Earth is there as a wonder. My body is a wonder. Eternity is possible. Enlightenment is possible. Brotherhood, sisterhood is available. So everything is available in the here and the now. That is apranahita. The other day we spoke about a wave searching for water. It's silly for a wave to go and look for water. She is water already. If the wave does not know that she is water, she's scared. Going up, she's scared. Going down, she's scared. She's afraid of beginning, of ending, of being, of non-being, of high, being high, or being low. But the moment when she realizes that she's water, she loses all these kind of afflictions. And she doesn't have to go and look for water. She is water right in the here and the now. So with mindfulness and concentration, you don't need to go and look for anything, including the Kingdom of God, including enlightenment. Because every in-breath can bring enlightenment. Every step can bring enlightenment and joy and peace and compassion. That is why you are already what you want to become. You don't have to become a Buddha. You are already a Buddha. When you breathe in and you know that you are breathing in, enlightenment is there. Enlightenment is awareness, is concentration. And Buddhahood is your nature. And it would be silly if you discriminate between you and the Buddha. And the safest place to find the Buddha is you. And that is the meaning of apranihita, aimlessness. And when you stop running, you have peace right away. And you have happiness right away. This is a wonderful door of liberation. When you are able to stop running, you begin to touch deeply the present moment, life with all the wonders. And every moment can be a moment of fulfillment, right here and right now. You don't need to go anywhere. You don't need to go to India. You don't need to go to Jerusalem. You don't need to go anywhere. You just stay here. If you are able to stop running, if you can be established in the here and the now, and touch deeply life and its wonder, and then each moment can be a moment of fulfillment. And that's what the wave feels when she realized that she is water. No running anymore. And that is one of the teachings of the Buddha on concentration that is available in all schools of Buddhism. Emptiness. Signlessness and aimlessness. You can practice Buddhism in many ways. There are many people who practice devotion. But the essence of Buddhism is insight. To practice insight is the best. In many Buddhist countries, people still practice, most of people practice devotion. It can help. It can make people suffer less. But it is the practice of concentration that can help people liberate. There was a man, a businessman in the time of the Buddha. His name is Anathapindika. He went to the Buddha's place and listened to the Dhamma talks and so on. But his greatest joy is to serve the Buddha and the Sangha. He got the fulfillment by serving the Buddha and his Sangha. He was a rich businessman, and he took a great deal of pleasure offering the Buddha a practice center and many other things that Sangha need. He went to the city of Rajagraha, and he met the Buddha for the first time. And he invited Buddha to go to his country, Shravasti, in order to teach. And the Buddha agreed. So he went back to his city and bought a lovely park from a prince. And when the Buddha came, he offered that to the Buddha as the first practice center in the country of Shravasti. And he and his wife and his children come regularly every fortnight to listen to a Dhamma talk and to make offering to the Buddha and the Sangha. He had a generous heart. He practiced generosity. That is why he has a lot of friends. And one time he got He suffered bankruptcy. But his friend came and helped him to rebuild his business. One day the Buddha learned that he was very sick. His name is Anathapindika. That person really has a good heart because he took care of the poor people, the orphans, and that's why they love him. He had a lot of friends. And the name Anathapindika was given him by the people of his city. His real name is Sudatta. Anathapindika means the one who takes care of the poor people. The Buddha went to his home and visited him. And after that, he assigned his disciple Shariputra to take care of this lay person and to help him die peacefully. And that day, the Venerable Shariputra learned that Anathapindika was dying. So after the arm round, he invited his brother in the Dharma, Ananda, to join him, visiting Anathapindika. And when the lay person saw the two Venerables coming, he was so happy. He tried to sit up, but he was so weak. He could not sit up. Shariputra said, "Dear friend, don't try too hard. Just remain like that. We will bring two chairs close to you and we will talk." And when the two monks are seated, Shariputra asked, "Dear friend, how do you feel in your body? Is the pain in your body decreasing or increasing?" Terminal illness. And Anathapindika said, "Dear Venerables, it does not seem that the pain in my body is decreasing. It seems to be increasing all the time." Shariputra said, "In that way, let us do together a guided meditation to reduce the pain. And the best that we focus our attention on the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha." Shariputra was a very intelligent monk, one of the elders of the monastic community. He knew that Anathapindika took a great deal of pleasure serving the Buddha and the Sangha. That's why talking about Buddha and the Sangha could focus his attention on the object of his devotion and happiness. And that is why with guided meditation, the lay person suffers much less after a few minutes of practice. And then Shariputra follow with breathing in, I'm aware of the element air in me. Breathing out, I smile to the element air in me. Breathing in, I am aware of the element air outside of me, and so on. So he went through the four elements: air, water, heat, and earth. So the meditation, the guided meditation, went through the six sense organs, the six objects of the six sense, and the six consciousness. And then Shariputra begin with continue with the meditation on on interbeing. Breathing in, I am aware of this body. Of my eyes, my nose, my ear, my tongue, my body. Breathing out, I know that my eyes is made of non-eyes elements. My body is made of non-body elements. When conditions come, my body manifests. When conditions are no longer together, my body stop manifesting. Breathing in, I know my body has come from nowhere. When conditions are sufficient together, my body manifests. Breathing out, I see that my body will not go anywhere. When the conditions are no longer sufficient, my body just stop this manifestation in order to manifest otherwise. And my body does not go anywhere. And the meditation focus on it was focused on interbeing, interdependence of and conditions. My body is free from the notion of being and non-being. It is like talking to a flame. We know that the flame has not manifested. We don't see the appearance, the sign of a flame. And yet, we do not try to qualify, to describe the flame as being or non-being. The flame has not manifested yet in its usual sign and form. And yet, we don't say that it belongs to the realm of non-being. And we can talk to the flame already. We can say something like, "My dear, the flame, I know you are somewhere there. Hidden in the box, or maybe outside of the box. I know that if there are enough conditions, you will manifest." Of course, the conditions are inside, but outside also. Outside there is oxygen. A flame would not be able to manifest without oxygen. And then another condition, maybe my fingers. So you can say, "My dear little flame, why don't you manifest for us in your usual sign, appearance?" And the little flame say, "Dear Thầy Disangha, I'm ready. So help me with the last condition." Now we recognize the flame because we are used to this form. And we may ask, "My dear little flame, where have you come from?" Our body, "My dear body, where have you come from?" In a few seconds, this sign will be no longer there, and I may miss it. And you might ask, my dear little flame, where have you been gone? We can continue the conversation with the flame. And we can hear the flame saying like things like this, Dear Thai, Dear Sangha, I have not come from nowhere. I have not come from the south, the north, the east, and the west. My nature is no coming. Coming is just one notion. There is no coming. When conditions come together, I manifest. I have not come from somewhere. No coming is the truth. My dear little flame, where have you gone? I am not gone anywhere. My nature is not going. When conditions are no longer manifested, conditions are no longer sufficient, I just stop manifestation. I do not go anywhere. I don't go to the south. I don't go to the north. My nature is the nature of no going, no coming, no going. Modern science have used the word non-locality, which is very close. Non-locality. So looking into the true nature of the flame, we can see that we cannot describe the flame as existing when we see the form, the sign. We cannot describe the flame as not existing when it has not manifest. So all these notions of being and non-being, coming or going, do not apply to the flame. Do not apply to us and to anything. And if we have fear, anger, despair, because we are caught in these notions of coming and going, being and non-being. And when they reach that point of guided meditation, Anattapindika begin to cry. No coming, no going, no being, no non-being. I'm free. When you die, and if you think that you are that body, you will suffer a lot. This body is not me. I'm not caught in this body. This consciousness is not me. I am not caught in this consciousness. When conditions are sufficient, body and mind manifest in this way. When conditions are no longer sufficient, mind and body cease that manifestation in order to manifest differently. I am not caught in this or that form, this body or that body. I am free. So when the Venerable Ananda saw Anattapindika crying, he was very surprised, because the guided meditation went very well. Dear friend, are you crying? Do you still regret something? No, Venerable Ananda, I don't regret anything. But why do you cry? Or you did not succeed enough in your guided meditation? No, Venerable Ananda, I did it very well. I succeeded in my meditation. Why are you crying then? And then Natamika tried his mind and he said, Dear Venerable Ananda, Ananda is younger than Sariputra. Venerable Ananda, I cry because I'm so moved. I have served the Buddha more than 30 years, the Sangha more than 30 years. But I have never received and practiced something as wonderful. I'm free now. I'm not afraid. This teaching of no birth, no death, no beginning, no ending, no coming, no going, so wonderful, I feel free. And Ananda said, Dear friend, you don't know, but this teaching the Buddha gave to us monastics very often, almost every day. And trying to keep his smile, Anattapindika said, Dear Venerable Ananda, please go home and tell our teacher that those of us in the world who are so busy, who have no time in order to receive this teaching and put into the practice, but there are at least a number of us, although busy in the world, but you have enough conditions in order to receive this kind of teaching and apply to our life. Please go back and tell the Lord. We want this teaching to be dispensed to lay people as well. Ananda said, Yes, I will do that. And with that, the lay person, Anattamika, passed away peacefully and happily. And this story is recorded in a sutra called The Teaching Given to the Dying Person, available in the Plumbless Chanting Book, available in the Pali canon and the Chinese canon also. And my advice is that we should not wait until the moment we die in order to receive the practice. We have to begin the practice of concentration in order to touch the nature of no birth, no death, no being and non-being. That will bring us a lot of joy. We should not only practice the practice of devotion. I know that the practice of devotion can help relieve suffering, but it is the practice of insight that can help us to be truly free. And the more freedom we have, the happier we become. Well, dear friends, we have spent 6 days together. Happy moments practicing together. And we have allowed the good seeds in us to be watered. I hope that everyone will be able to continue the practice when you go home and try to organize so that you have a group in order to practice with. Shall we invite the children to come and sing a song together? No. Please take good care and keep the practice alive by building a Sangha. We are all together, and it is possible to continue the work of the Buddha, generating the energy of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. and help us and people in our society to suffer less and to experience the joy of compassion, understanding. Brother Pháp Lai, where is Thầy Pháp Lai? Sư cô chẳng không? Sư invite friends who organize this retreat in order to thank them for having organized for us.
He wished to invite those who organize for this retreat to come here. And through
the monastics are asked to come to the stage, and the members of the OI order, especially those who have been ordained during the retreat.
By the way, I would like to remind, among us, there is so many scientists. You may remember that on the 1st of June to 21 of June, we have a retreat of scientists and Buddhists hand in hand in Plum Village. Scientists and the Buddhists together to look deeply. June 20. Calligraphy to offer to the organizer who can represent. To whom?
to give to whom?
Teresa.
Where's Teresa?
We need to give him the mic.
Ah, here.
Sư cô muốn nói không hay là con? Con nói là. Dạ thầy.
Yeah, if you can transform your that is a big gift for him. Thank you.
So, dear respected Thai, dear Do Bo community, on behalf of us, we would like to thank our organizers, Therese, Angie, many people of our Sangha in England, and to make this retreat, very wonderful retreat possible. And we also thank our young ones with their laughter and their cry and thank all of us to make this retreat into a very nourishing and healing retreat. We know that we are all one Sangha worldwide, and knowing that you are there in England, we are very happy, and we take you along in our heart to Ireland and to Europe and to everywhere in the world. Thank you for being there, and each moment that we take a breath, a step, in the here and the now, we are connected as one spiritual family. Again, thank you so much, our dear friends in England. Thank you.
We also have a small gift for our lovely typist who has worked so hard these past days, Claire. Maybe it's too hard for you to come up now, but I will just hold it up. Thank you for all your lovely work.
Dear friends, I just think we all need to say thank you. As you already have, many of you, last night and all the time. Just it's been wonderful to have the Plum Village and Sangha here, yes? So, thank you too for being here, because that makes it lovely for us as well.
Thank you. Happy continuation with the practice.
Difference among those who organize wonderful hands for this retreat, there is one friend who is in the hospital, and I was able, in your behalf, visit her, and I did 20 minutes of guided meditation, and I said that, I asked her to close the eye, you feel the energy of the whole Sangha who practice and send and enter into your lung with the air and calm and neutralize all the unwholesome cell in your body and neutralize. And you breathe out, you send out all the bad energy. And I advise her to keep that the whole moment. I said that you are already in the hospital and you are in the good hand of the doctor. So you are in charge of your mind. So your mind can change the situation. If you continue to breathe in and send the good energy of the practice of thousands of people and then neutralize all the negative things in your lungs, because she has cancer everywhere in lungs. And then you breathe out, you send all the negative things. And then it helped, because I have done with a number of good friends of me in Vietnam, and it gives a lot of strength.
Dear friends, I have a few announcements. Perhaps you would like to sit down just for a couple of minutes.
So for our monastic brothers and sisters, well, one last announcement too. For dinner, this is announcement for the monastic. For dinner, please, you can pack extra lunch for dinner, and that's okay. So let the people serve. let the people serve first, and then you can pack your dinner. Because some of our lay friends cancel their lunch, so that is for us to bring along to Ireland. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. What's this?